Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Paul Symington. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing really well, thanks, Chris.
All right, excellent. We were talking last week a bit about some of the wine regions in Portugal, the sub-regions and the Douro. This week, we're going to talk maybe a wee bit more about some of the grape varieties. Touriga Nacional? Not that I've pronounced it right. How do you pronounce
nearly,
it?
Nearly. Pretty good. Touriga Nacional.
Oh, that's not too
yeah,
bad.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
That's the main grape variety, isn't it?
It's the best, but not the most widely planted because it's quite low yielding.
Yeah.
There's small berries. Small berries.
But small grape berries give you lots of skin.
They do. But the old days, the farmer would be paid by weight. And don't forget, I mean, my family owned just over 1,000 hectares of vineyard. I mean, that sounds a lot, but it's 26 different vineyards in different places of the region. And yet that's only about 18% of our production. So we have to buy from a lot of farmers. And in the old days, the farmers were paid by weight. So as a low-yielding grape variety like Touriga Nacional, they'd say, you must be joking. You don't want me to plant that. But since the good research was done in the 70s, we realized how incredibly important Touriga Nacional was. So now we have a lot of Touriga Nacional on our own vineyards. But farmers are still a bit reluctant to plant it because it's also quite susceptible to what we call zervinho, which the French call couleur, which is poor fruit set. But it's a great Touriga Nacional. The other one we love is Touriga Franca.
Yep.
Very aromatic, very late ripening. Also a tricky one because it's late ripening, late picking. It's often picked in early October and the weather's changed by then. So some people don't like it too much because of the risk, you know, the weather comes in, wrecks your crop. And then we have Barroca.
Yeah, that's Tinta Barroca, isn't it?
Tinta Barroca is a bit like Merlot. On its own, it's not the most romantic, most attractive one, but it's, for a great port, you need a bit of Barroca in there to really give it the structure on the body. So Touriga Nacional, Touriga Franca, to give it elegance, depth, complexity, and Barroca to give you that sort of backbone. And then there are more interesting ones.
The trouble with Tinta Barroca is it's quite thin skin, it's quite susceptible to dehydration, is that right?
It is. It's a big yielding one. It's a nice big bunch. It looks nice, looks big, but it can be, you know, if you have rain, and then a bit of humidity, rot can set in very quickly because the skin will fracture on one berry and then you get mildew right through the vineyard very quickly.
Yeah, okay. What about, what else have you got there? There's Tempranillo it's not really called Tempranillo?
Rorige, we call it Rorige. Actually, do you know, we haven't planted a single vine of Rorige for the last 8 years. We reckon we've probably got the wrong clone in the Douro. We've been systematically disappointed with our Rorige at all our different vineyards. And we've now got an experimental vineyard with 26 different clones that we've gone from all over Spain, all over Portugal. And because, I mean, look what Tempranillo does in Rioja Vega Sicilia, for example. But we can't just get that quality in Portugal, neither for port nor for Douro DOC wines. So we've not planted any. We're waiting to see what comes out of this experimental vineyard. And we'll only plant Rorige again when we feel much more confident about it.
And then what's the other one?
Tinta Cão, which means the color of the dog, which is a rather strange
color
name.
Color of the what? The dog?
The dog. Cão is dog, yeah.
Oh.
Tinta Cão, yeah, we like that in small doses. And we're increasingly planting now Suzão. So Suzão gives high acidity and fabulous color. So that's one we've planted quite a lot more recently. And also Alicante Boucher.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is quite widely planted down in the south. It's always been in the Douro, but a bit forgotten. So we're planting Alicante Boucher again for its acidity, for its balance, and its lovely color.
One of the things you said is that you've got about 12% of production, is that right?
Yeah.
Do you buy in grapes yourself?
Yeah, we buy in grapes, yeah. All the port companies have always bought in grapes. We've become more and more growers of our own. And as I mentioned earlier, we have almost double our nearest any other company in terms of vineyard holding. But we still rely on buying from a lot of farmers. But these are people we know really well. We've bought their grapes probably for 50 years, if not longer.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're people we really know. We work with them on their vineyard work. We choose the picking date. We only pick what we want, when we want, and there's a very close relationship with these people.
One of the things that Portugal's got, it's got this weird system of ensuring that you don't get oversupplied the beneficio Are you in supporter of that, or not a supporter of it? Or
well, if you can, on Thursday, I'm here, Wednesday rather, this week, I'm doing a seminar here where I'm going to be really saying some harsh things about it. It was a system invented in the 30s, and we're in 2014.
Yeah.
And I just don't go along with that. It made sense then. It doesn't make sense today. It's caused all sorts of distortions in the region.
Give an overview of what it is first.
Okay. Benefício is the Portuguese law, which basically says on each vineyard, you can only make a certain percentage of your grapes into port. And even the most highly graded vineyard in the Douro will only be allowed to put a proportion of its wine into port. Even if you just want to be a port producer, you can't make all the wine from your... And it's crazy. That means that you've got this fabulous... Imagine going to Lafite and saying, only this third can actually go into Lafite. This lot has to go and make something else. So it's...
It was there to try and manage oversupply, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was made to manage oversupply, and it came in with a whole host of regulations. And those regulations, some are applicable, grading of the vineyards according to quality, based on its position, on its yields, on its age, on its trellising system, on its pruning system. All that stuff was brilliant and actually well ahead of anybody else in the world. But parts of the rules and regulations made in the 30s and 40s are simply crazy nowadays and causing serious problems for people who want to make great port. So we really want to see reform of that. But there's a big inertia and reluctance to see change because there's lots of vested interest, and that's a problem for us. We believe in the future of port, and so we have to really stand up and maybe make ourselves a bit unpopular sometimes and say where we think it's wrong.
It always seemed a bit strange that you could have really good quality grapes and then you couldn't use them because you'd used up your allocation, whereas someone might have some rubbish grapes. Did people buy someone else's wine to get access to their classification or rights?
We have fantastic properties, or we believe they're fantastic, like Malvia, there's like Vesuvio, like Cavadinha, like Bonfim, and we want to make it all into port, but we can't. But the government allows us to buy other grapes and transfer their port license onto ours. They don't mind that. They agree that. But it costs us a fortune. So we're buying a whole lot of grapes we don't even want and don't even need just to be able to put their licenses on. It's a very expensive, it's a ridiculous system.
And what do you do with the grapes afterwards?
Well, we make them into red wines and white wines. Some, if they're good enough, we can make them into something really decent and we sell them under our own name.
Yep.
But some of it is not good enough to make that and we just have to sell it off to some dealer somewhere. But it's a damn expensive, stupidly expensive process, which is adding cost to something that we don't believe we should have.
Is it encouraging people to be a bit lazy with their viticulture because they know I'm going to make some wine, it doesn't matter what the quality is because Symington's will buy it from us and we'll be fine because they need it to make their own port?
Well, we're pretty rigorous about what we take in, and even if we're just using the licenses there, if we want to make something decent, even if it's just red wine. So we're pretty rigorous. But you're absolutely right. There is an incentive there to just say, well, I've got the license, so I don't really care too much. The Port Wine Institute does have a fairly rigorous process of vetting the vineyards. So if you've got a grass growing that's higher than your vines, you might find your licenses cut next year. but it used to happen like that. There were horrible stories of places that are now football fields that used to still have a license to make port, you know.
And really?
People playing football on it, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So we have to move on.
Yeah.
And we have to encourage and even force the authorities, if we can, to modernize the system.
Will that mean that the classification system of the vineyards will change as well? Because at the moment they're classified A to F, aren't they?
The classification system is called the Sistema Moreira de Fonseca. It was instigated in 1947. It was ahead of anything else on earth. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. You know, altitude, everything, and it's still in use today. And you've got points for, you know, the age of your vines, the pruning, the altitude, the type of vines. But, for example, I've just mentioned altitude. Altitude, with global warming, the higher you were, the lower your rating. But today, there's some parts of that which doesn't make sense. Some high vineyards making fabulous wines.
Yeah.
So we believe that system also needs to be looked at. continues to be used. I'm a firm believer in the grading of the vineyards A to F, but I think that that what happened in 1947, again, it needs to be modernized for 2014.
Excellent. You're making red wines now. Now, that is one of the exciting things about Portugal at the moment, anyway, is some of the Douro reds are really, really yummy stuff.
I think they're world class. I think the Douro.
And I know this doesn't sound good. Great value as well.
Yeah, great value, good quality reds. I mean, I think, remember when Chianti was all about cheap stuff, which you had with a pizza on your way to the cinema with your girlfriend?
Yeah.
I mean, now Tuscany is seen as one of the great wine regions of the world and making phenomenal wines. And that all happened in the 80s, 90s, and now I think that's going to happen to the Douro. I don't know when it's going to happen, whether it's next year or in 5 years' time. But there's now critical mass of a whole bunch of new generation of winemakers in the Douro making extraordinary wines. But at the moment, they're not really known. If you stop somebody in the street and say Douro, they probably shake their head. They don't really know. But I think that the quality of the wines using Touriga Nacional, Franca, Suzanne, these great varieties, are making incredible wines with great varieties people have never heard of. But they're fantastic wines. And I think one day a spark will ignite and the Douro will be seen as a fantastic. We'll never make cheap wines there. The yields are too low.
Yep.
The vineyards are too tough to work. They're always going to be low-yielding wines. And, of course, they can't be cheap because our yields are so low. We can never compete with Chile or even the Alentejo, the southern part of Portugal. But I think for complexity, for style. But we're not there yet in terms of recognition. But I do think in terms of quality, some of the wines we make, whether it's Crisay or the Altana wines, are really extraordinary. But they're made by our friends like Nieport, like Valmiang, like Valado, Johnny Graham with Churchill. People are making extraordinary wines. And one day the spark will ignite and we'll really be seen as something special.
Are they more in the Jura Superior or the...
I think the best wines... I think actually...
The still wines rather than port.
Yeah, the still wines, I think the Douro Superior, there's some very interesting wines there. They've got their own special characteristics. I think the Baixo-Corgo are more easy drinking wines. But there's some. It's going to be very interesting to see if the Douro Terroir eventually becomes as complex as Burgundy, because they are so different. The rainfall is so different. The altitude is so different. North facing, south facing, and I think there's a real story there. Eventually, people will be talking about the different terroirs in the Douro. Now they're just talking about Douro as if it's all one. But how could it be one? It's 100 kilometers long.
Yeah.
800 mil rainfall in the west, down to 400 in the east. The wines are utterly different.
Okay. All right then, Paul. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.